Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, November 19th. Optimism high for Texas strong legislation. Landgraf tries again with plan to return millions of oil and gas taxes to basin. State Representative Brooks Landgraf's long-cherished Texas Strong legislative package to return millions of oil and natural gas severance tax revenues to the areas that produce them has its best chance yet of clearing the legislature and being signed into law, as if the rancor that House Speaker Dade Phelan and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick have shown each other will get in the way, Landgraf said. Both Speaker Phelan and Lieutenant Governor Patrick recognize the significant challenges and opportunities ahead for Texans, and I am confident they will be laser-focused on advancing the key priorities that matter most to our great state as the 2025 legislative session begins. We share a commitment to delivering strong, forward-thinking policies, and Texas Strong will be a cornerstone of that effort. The 89th biennial legislative session will start January 14th in Austin. This legislation provides a practical, common-sense solution to support the Permian Basin and other major energy-producing regions that form the foundation of Texas economy and way of life, said Landgraf, who chairs the House Environmental Regulation Committee. Regions like our own generate the tax revenue that funds critical infrastructure projects, bolsters public education, and supports essential services across the state. Simply put, Texas Strong will be vital in ensuring that these communities continue to thrive while maintaining Texas's leadership in energy production. For those reasons, the Odessa Republican said he is confident that even with many incoming new faces in the Texas House, Texas Strong will once again earn broad bipartisan support and pass decisively. At the same time, I am working proactively to promote the legislation in the Senate, where the introduction of a companion bill would build momentum and strengthen its chances of success, he said. Because Texas Strong must go through the Appropriations Committee, it will naturally follow that consideration of the state budget, presenting an inherent delay as it moves through the legislative process. Still, I'm optimistic about its path forward and confident the legislature will navigate these timelines effectively. Rest assured, I am fully committed to coalescing support in both chambers to ensure Texas Strong crosses the finish and ultimately delivers the transformative impact Texans deserve. During the last regular session in 2023, Landgraf's House Joint Resolution 111 and House Bill 2207 would have amended the Texas Constitution and state law to support transportation infrastructure, workforce and economic development, healthcare, schools, colleges, and first responders in Texas's key energy-producing counties. The bill would have also provided statewide property tax relief. H.J.R. 111 and H.B. 2207 passed out of the 150-member House with 144 votes of each to support each. But the measures died in House Republican Senator Joan Huffman's Senate Finance Committee. The additional revenue that Strong would bring to the Permian Basin would drastically improve the quality of life out here, and in so doing, further the cause of energy independence for the United States, Landgraf said then. A strong Permian Basin is in the best interest of Texas and the nation, as well as anyone else on planet Earth who values freedom and liberty, he said. For every current and future Texan, I will fight to pass Texas Strong next session. Landgraf opposed the Texas Severance Tax Revenue, an oil and natural defense fund, after state severance taxes had raised a record $10.8 billion in 2022, and Comptroller Glenn Hegar has forecast a $20 billion surplus for next year, most of it from West Texas oil and gas tax revenues. H.J.R. 111 would have needed a majority of Texas voters in the November 23, 2023 constitutional amendment election, while HB 2207 required a simple majority vote in each chamber and the governor's signature. Most of these severance tax dollars end up in the state's rainy day fund, but that fund is projected to reach its capacity in 2025, Landgraf explained. Rather than adding to the overflowing Rainer Day Fund, Texas Strong would simply collect the excess revenue and use it to fund basic functions that improve the quality of life for the workers and their families who generate the money in the first place, he said. The legislation would also dedicate portions of severance taxes to be used for property tax relief and to clean up air and groundwater contamination. In 2022, 32 out of the 254 Texas counties generated 90% of the state's severance tax revenue, sending more than $9 billion to the state coffers, Landgraf said. These same 32 counties, most of them in the Permian Basin, have accounted for 80% of collections since 2014 for a total of just under $40 billion. County to talk courthouse bond library. County officials will take up a number of items on a busy Tuesday agenda on Ector County business that includes funds for the library and possibly issuing debt for a new courthouse. Ector County commissioners will meet at 10 a.m. Tuesday to consider certificates of obligation for a new courthouse, game room regulations, and even a Food for Fines event at the Ector County Library. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett has said the courthouse cannot wait, as issues including water draining into offices and elevators that don't work more than they do make it a top priority. The court will begin the process of issuing certificates of obligation in the amount of no more than $325 million to build a new courthouse in downtown Odessa, and to also complete an overhaul of the Ector County Juvenile Justice Center. He has said a lack of space is also an issue at the courthouse, and the new courthouse will be built on a site near the current courthouse, but the youth center will stay on Yukon Road where it is now, but will be remodeled and space will be added. He said that plan keeps the center near the ECISD Alternative Education Center and is the most fiscally responsible thing to do. Fawcett has previously hoped for several counties to group together to build a regional youth facility, but that did not work out. Ector County issued $26 million in certificates of obligation for a new Ector County Juvenile Justice Center several years ago. The existing facility was built in 1974. The county went out to bid for a 64-bed facility that would have included beds for pre- and post-adjudication kids, but it received no bids. They went out to bid again for a much smaller pre-adjudication facility, but they received proposals of $46 million and $54 million in 2023. He said combining the youth center and new courthouse plans makes sense. The county is working to secure the downtown property for the new courthouse, and Fawcett said they will now begin the process of issuing the certificates of obligation while also listening to and informing residents about the process. What to do about the courthouse has plagued the commissioner's court for years. In 2009, a committee was formed to determine next steps for either repairing or replacing the courthouse. To build a new courthouse in 2009 would have cost an estimated $55 million. A poor economy led to the committee waiting until 2013 to take the issue to voters. By that time, the cost was estimated at $90 million for a new build. The 2013 $95 million bond election failed. 4,918 to 2,609. Fawcett said he believes issuing the COs is the only way to go, and that the move will also allow all county offices now at the annex on 8th Street to move to the new courthouse. In 1988, the auditor, IT, tax assessor, collector, and commissioner's court moved to the annex due to a lack of space at the current courthouse. On Tuesday, the court will also discuss a plan to commit $10 million from fiscal year 2025 fund balance for the construction of a new Ector County library and additional dedicated funds and in-kind services to bring the project to completion. The court will also hold a public hearing on Ector County game room regulations. New council will be sworn in Tuesday. It's been a wild couple of weeks following an election sweep locally. Incumbents Mayor Javier Hoven and council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata were shown the door by voters. Mayor-elect Cal Hendrick and Councilman-elect Craig Stoker and Eddie Mitchell will be sworn in during a public ceremony at 4 p.m. Tuesday at the Ector Theater. The current council will meet one last time Monday at 3 p.m. to certify the election. Monday's agenda is a simple one, unlike Tuesday's meeting, where ousted council members sought to pay out more than $700,000 to Odessa's city manager, who resigned during the meeting. Ector County District Court Judge Lori Ruiz Crutcher signed a temporary restraining order Wednesday morning, preventing the city from paying out the contracts of City Attorney Dan Jones, former City Manager John Beckmeyer, City Secretary Norma Aguilar, or Deputy City Manager Gopi Bernal. The TRO does not prohibit the city from firing them. On Tuesday night, Beckmeyer resigned, and Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan rushed to court to file for the TRO and to ask a judge to determine if Beckmeyer, Jones, Aguilar, and Bernal, if their contracts were even legal. Each of the 3-year contracts issued in April state the foursome should be paid the remainder of their contracts should they leave before April 2027, whether they're fired or quit on their own. City residents also learned recently that Bernal is being investigated internally for possible wrongdoing, and Gallivan has been asked to request a Texas Rangers investigation into former Equipment Services Director Chris Adams and his use of city-issued purchase card. Beckmeyer fired Adams on Monday, and it came out that Adams had filed a grievance with the city on October 14th, alleging Bernal forced him to award a tire contract to Forrest Brothers and to reduce the value of vehicles later donated to Odessa's sister city in Mexico. Agapito has created a hostile work environment for myself and my employees. He is a bully and a cancer. He relies on the people he placed in key positions as interim city manager to help maintain control over employees and the city, Adams wrote in his grievance letter. I and my employees currently feel our jobs are threatened. Many city employees are afraid to come forward against Agapito as they know that they will retaliate against them. An open records request filed by the Odessa American on October 9th requesting all human resource complaints filed against Bernal is still pending. Jones sent a letter to the Texas Attorney General's office arguing that the release of the documents could impede any investigations into his actions. Jennifer Rainier, Public Information Coordinator for the City of Odessa, said human resources indicated Adams did not file any complaints. Back to the golden parachutes. Jones told the Odessa American that it was Hoven's idea for the 3-year contracts and even said Beckmeyer's contract is worthless. He said that during the April meeting, where the contracts were approved, Swanner didn't use the word contract when discussing Beckmeyer's contract. Beckmeyer's annual salary was $250,000, Jones's contract is $215,000, and Aguilar's is $135,000. Bernal's annual salary is $208,000. Jones also wrote in an email at 1:44 a.m. Wednesday telling Bernal that although the city council had voted 5-1 to name Bernal interim city manager Tuesday night, Bernal could not perform any actions as such until he accepted the position. He also instructed Bernal not to pay out Beckmeyer's contract. Bernal eventually turned down the promotion. Hoven denied being behind the contracts and instead said they were Jones' idea. After the contracts were approved, city council members Steve Thompson and Gilbert Vasquez said no one, including Jones, had told them they were approving new contracts. They thought they were only approving pay raises. Hendrick, Stoker, Mitchell, and Thompson, who was reelected by voters November 5th, were originally scheduled to be sworn in November 26th, but they moved it up to Tuesday. Once sworn in, Hendrick said he intends to ask the council to review all of the former council's recent decisions. He also wants to look at Adams' allegations. Hendrick said he questions why the city would donate vehicles to a city in Mexico rather than another city in West Texas. You know, there are some cities that are probably not as wealthy as ours, Hendrick said. Since the election, Hendrick said he has had received numerous phone calls from city employees lodging complaints, including one so serious he referred the woman to Gallivan. On Friday, the misdemeanor warrants were issued by Parks and Recreation Director Max Reyes for official oppression and indecent assault for an alleged incident involving a woman who had hoped to transfer to the Parks and Recreation Department. Rumors on Thursday swirled that the current council would use the final Monday meeting to fire Jones after he did not move fast enough Wednesday to pay out Beckmeyer, who is a friend and political ally of Swanner, Hoven, and Mata. But the agenda does not note any personnel issues. Thompson has been at odds with the trio since they took over the majority control of the council 2 years ago, and on Thursday night, he says he believes Hoven, Mata, and Swanner are using Jones as a scapegoat. I believe Dan is a good guy, a good person. I'm not sure he has all of the experience he needs to be a city attorney. However, that said, he works hard and he tells the truth, so far as I know, and before I want to replace him, I give him some time and let the new council evaluate his performance, Thompson said. Mitchell said he has no interest in rehiring Jones if he's fired. I don't want to rehire anybody that has anything to do with what we just had, Mitchell said. If you were already in the system and was doing bad, then you're gonna keep doing bad. So I don't want to vote for anybody that's got one of them contracts. Stoker isn't interested in saving Jones' job either. I don't think he's displayed much competence as a city attorney, and he certainly has not protected his charges as he works for all city council members, Stoker said. Jones allowed Vasquez and Thompson to sign the three-year contract, Stoker said. Jones also didn't object when the council allowed Beckmeyer to sign a contract with the Texas Government Accountability Association, a nonprofit group that promised to help the city in its efforts to be transparent and ethical by creating policies and procedures, Stoker said. The open-ended agreement is $24,000 a year for 2 years through 4 years 2 through 5 and can increase at that time. In addition, it can only be ended if it's placed on a ballot and residents vote to do so. What happened with Beckmeyer almost walking away with $700,000 highlights the shadiness and backstabbing nature of Swanner, Hoven, and Mata. These are not the actions that rational, ethical people take. The citizens of Odessa spoke November 5th and said, "We are tired of this. We are ready for competent people to be in the roles. And Mr. Jones was definitely on the list of people I want to reevaluate," Stoker said. Residents also learned recently that Matt Coday, president of the Oil and Gas Workers Association, has filed a $25 million lawsuit against the city of Odessa, Beckmeyer, Swanner, and Hoven. According to Odessa Police Department records obtained by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act, Swanner, former Ector County Republican Chairwoman Tisha Crow, and Medical Center Hospital Board member Wallace Dunn filed a report with the police department in November 2022 accusing Coday of harassing them at council meetings and on social media. Crow told police she saw an Ford F-250 in front of her residence on November 15, 2022, and when she ran the license plate using her insurance company computer, it came back to Coday. Crow and her husband Chris own a farmer's insurance branch. Police determined no crime had been committed by Coday. Then last December, an unknown person texted OPD Police Chief Michael Gerke, asking for someone to investigate a man for walking around in and around houses in the Crow's neighborhood, and supplied the chief with Coday's license plate number. Coday says he was in Andrews at the time, and again, police determined Coday had committed no crimes. On March 21st, the AG ordered the city to release the names of the texter, and it turned out to be Hoven, a political ally of Swanner and at that time of the Crow's. Coday and his former attorney, Bobby Bland, believed Hoven was guilty of abusing his powers as mayor and asked the Texas Rangers to investigate. They declined. In addition, the Texas Department of Insurance closed the investigation it launched into Tisha Crow without taking any action. Coday had filed a complaint against her, noting she told police she'd used her insurance company's computer to look up his license plate. Dunn filed a defamation lawsuit against Coday in August, and Coday is countersuing him. According to Hendrick and Thompson, the city of Odessa's insurance carrier is in the process of determining if its contract attorneys should defend the city, Beckmeyer, Hoven, and Swanner in the Coday lawsuit. If the insurance carrier opts not to defend them, the new city council and its lawyers will have to decide if the defendants were acting in the scope of their jobs and if they should be defended by the taxpayer's dime, Hendrick said. Public invited to swearing in for new council. The makeup of the majority of Odessa's city council changes at 4 p.m. Tuesday, when the newly elected mayor and three council members are sworn in. The public is invited to the ceremony at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Mayor-elect Cal Hendrick will be sworn in by Justice Stacy Trotter. Hendrick soundly defeated incumbent Mayor Javier Hoven during a bitter race where Hoven and his surrogates sought to portray Hendrick as a liberal and even attacked Hendrick's church. Hendrick ran on repairing Odessa's failing infrastructure, particularly roads and water and trash service. District Judge Sarah Kate Billingsley will swear in newly elected council member at large, Craig Stoker. Stoker defeated incumbent Niece Swanner in a divisive campaign where Swanner and her allies attacked Stoker, who is openly gay. Those attacks, like the ones on Hendrick, backfired, as Swanner also lost decisively. Stoker, the executive director of Odessa's Meal on Wheels, has said he wants a positive future for Odessa and wants to get to work on infrastructure. Judge Eddie Spivey will swear in Eddie Mitchell, who defeated incumbent Mark Mata for the District 1 seat. Spivey has said he is concerned with the infrastructure and also ran on sprucing up what he calls the gateway to Odessa, Odessa's south side, which is part of his district. Incumbent District 2 council member Steve Thompson is the only incumbent who held his seat. He will be sworn in by Judge Den Wallen. Thompson will enter his second term with a friendlier group on the dais, as he has been at odds with Swanner, Hoven, and Motter for 4 years. The current council will meet one last time to certify the election at 3 p.m. Tuesday at Odessa City Hall. At the same time as the new council swearing in on Tuesday, a reception for Mata, Swanner, and Hoven is scheduled at the Elegante to thank them for their service. There were several complaints about Reyes. Odessa Parks and Recreation Director Max Reyes, who was placed on administrative leave Friday after two misdemeanor warrants for his arrest were issued, has been the subject of past human resource complaints. According to documents obtained by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act, Human Resources received a report in August 2023 that Reyes, 54, had screamed at an employee multiple times in front of other employees, made derogatory remarks about being her father, thrown items at her, hit her, and pulled her hair. During the subsequent investigation, a second employee stated she believed Reyes was trying to push her out of the department by putting her into a smaller office, yelling at her, and using demeaning language. An investigator from Human Resources determined that communication and consistency were weak within the department, but said there were no witnesses to Reyes yelling at the employees, throwing things, pulling the employee's hair, hitting anyone, or speaking inappropriately to anyone. The investigator recommended Reyes clearly and efficiently communicate to all employees and include a written follow-up if the response was in person. 2 months later, an employee alleged Reyes placed his hand on her leg during a September 29, 2023, meeting, prompting Reyes to be told he was under investigation. He was prohibited from retaliating against her, and if he did so, he could be fired. Documents indicate the woman, Reyes, and a third person were interviewed about the meeting by Human Resources. The three did not agree on much beyond the fact that a meeting did occur on September 29, 2023, an investigator report wrote. The investigator then stated they'd found no evidence to substantiate the woman's claims. According to court records obtained by the Odessa American, two misdemeanor warrants were issued by Reyes Friday after a city employee accused him of making sexual advances toward her and hinting that a transfer into his department was contingent upon her being good to him. Reyes is facing one count each of official oppression and indecent assault, both misdemeanors. The 26-year-old woman told Odessa Police Reyes scheduled a meeting to discuss her possible transfer at 6:30 a.m., and when she arrived, they were completely alone with the lights off. At the end of the interview, the woman said she began to walk away, but Reyes grabbed her by the waist and pulled her toward him. The indecent assault complaint states, Reyes touched the woman with his genitals with the intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of the defendant, and he acted without her consent. He told police, Reyes said, "Man, I don't even get a hug for doing you a favor," and shook his head as she moved away. As they walked outside, he advised her that she owed him a favor and that she needed to be good because he knew a lot of people as he laughed. The officer wrote in his report, Reyes was hired by June 2023 after Steve Patton retired without notice after 32 years of service in March 2023. Reyes was placed on administrative leave the same week Equipment Services Director Chris Adams was fired for allegedly misusing city funds, and Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan was asked to look into the possibility of bringing in the Texas Rangers to investigate him. In media interviews, Adams has claimed he was fired because he filed grievances against Deputy City Manager Gabe Bernal, and he provided Odessa Headlines publisher Jeff Russell a grievance form listing a litany of alleged wrongdoings. However, city HR officials said Friday there is no record Adams ever filed any complaints. Reyes and Adams were both hired by Bernal while he served as interim city manager from December 2022 through August 10, 2023. Bernal himself is being investigated for possible wrongdoing by an outside law firm hired by the city. Odessa City Attorney Dan Jones said last week, the city council tried to appoint Bernal interim city manager for the second time after city manager John Beckmeyer resigned November 12th, but Bernal turned down the job and continues to act as the deputy city manager. New council. Councilman-elect Craig Stoker, who will be sworn in Tuesday, said Thursday night he was particularly disturbed by the decision to appoint Bernal interim city manager again, considering the investigation and the rumors flying around. Whatever happened Tuesday night to elevate him back into a role of leadership was one of the biggest slaps in the face to the city staff that I've ever seen, Stoker said. I think the only redeeming thing that Mr. Bernal has done is not accept the position, so he gets 2.5 days to sit and not bully anybody anymore. Whether the stories are true or not, the fact they exist, to me, talks about the culture at City Hall, and that has got to change, Stoker said. You cannot operate a workplace and expect to fill over 300 empty positions when you are leading by fear and intimidation. Again, I don't know if that's what is actually happening, but that's the story everybody knows. Stoker said it feels as though there are rats jumping ship and turning on each other. It's the wildest thing. I don't get it. How do you run an organization like this and expect to have any sort of forward momentum or stability? When you look at the way Odessa functions, the infrastructure problems we have, it's no wonder. It's no wonder because we look at what the leadership has done to us. He is hopeful things will change once he, Cal Hendrick, and Eddie Mitchell are sworn in. At a certain point in my campaign, the talking point became leadership, and when we have proper leadership, a lot of things will solve themselves, Stoker said. Hendrick, too, said he is deeply bothered by all of the investigations. It's very troubling when we're trying to come into office to start working on infrastructure problems that are real and in serious need of attention, but instead we have all these distractions about all of these other things that are leading to all these personnel issues and all these investigations, Hendrick said. Ever since November 5th, when Mayor Javier Hoven, Denise Swanner, and Mark Mata were defeated, Hendricks said his phone has been ringing constantly with people wanting to report sexual misconduct, conflicts of interest, and other issues. He suspects he'll be asking D.A. Justy Gallivan for a lot of help in the coming weeks. I don't know if any of it's true, but there's a lot to look at, Hendricks said. I'm shocked by some of the stuff being reported to me, and I want to do the right thing. I want to make sure these people's rights are protected, and I want to make sure that if anything happened, there are consequences. I don't want to go on a witch hunt. That's not my intention at all. But it just seems like there's an incredible amount of complaints out there. One of the first things they'll have to do is hire a city manager with a lot of experience, knowledge, and qualifications to help them, Hendricks said. I hope none of it's true, but I'm afraid. There are certainly a lot of complaints, and maybe people weren't heard when things were reported. Maybe they just want a voice, but some of it is more serious, Hendricks said Thursday. It's a very disappointing way to start because I wanted to have a positive start and move forward. We haven't even been sworn in yet, and I probably work four full days this week. Cates, Antibiotic Awareness Week, by Carol A. Cates, MSN, MBA, RN, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. I have a picture in my office of my dad when he was 3. In that picture, he is sitting next to my aunt, Gertrude Ann, who was 18 months old at the time. I never met Gertrude Ann because not long after that picture was taken, she died. She died from croup, something now we don't really even think of as serious. The reason croup is so different now is antibiotics. If antibiotics had existed when Gertrude Ann was sick, more than likely I would have met my aunt. Antibiotics, in so many ways, are literally miracles in a bottle. Unfortunately, with the rise of multi-drug-resistant organisms, MDROs, in the last few decades, the miracle antibiotics can provide is waning. That is why Antibiotic Awareness Week was added to the Health Awareness Calendar. It gives all of us the opportunity to become more educated about how to use antibiotics wisely, so they continue to provide miracles every day. MDROs are bacterial illnesses that over time have become resistant to multiple antibiotics. The one person probably who recognized the most is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA. Staphylococcus aureus, Staph, is a bacterium that we all carry around on our skin every day. It is part of the many bacteria that form our normal flora. On our skin, Staph for the most part is harmless. Unfortunately, when Staph gets in other parts of our bodies, like a wound or into the lungs, it can cause infections which can be quite serious. When is MRSA, the level of seriousness, going up? Because most antibiotics cannot kill MRSA, unfortunately, it's not just Staph that developed resistance. Now we are seeing multi-drug-resistant versions of bacteria that are really concerning, like tuberculosis and syphilis, because they aren't ever harmless. Drug resistance happens because bacteria can reproduce rapidly. It's almost like the selective breeding we have done for centuries in animals to bring out desirable qualities, like breeding racehorses for speed and endurance, or a dog for their abilities to detect scents, help us hunt game, and to be our companions. Say you get a cut and Staph gets into the wound and it gets infected. You go to the doctor and they prescribe an antibiotic. You take it for a few days and the cut gets better, so you stop taking the antibiotic. The problem is, if you haven't taken the full course of the antibiotic, some of those infectious bacteria have been weakened, but they aren't dead. Those bacteria then start reproducing as part of the normal flora on your skin. Later, you get an upper respiratory infection and decide to take the leftover antibiotics, but those bacteria that are still alive on your skin are affected, and just like that, last time, those bacteria that survive reproduce, but since they've survived the antibiotic twice, now their descendants are less and less weakened by the bacteria. Touch someone and share your bacteria with them, and they take antibiotics in the same way, and eventually over generations and generations of bacteria, which for them can be an amazingly short period of time, they aren't affected by the antibiotic at all, also known as resistant, and that resistance eventually happens with many antibiotics. This is why it is so important to take antibiotics only for bacterial infections and that you take them as they are prescribed. When we take antibiotics for viral illnesses, we create resistance in our normal flora. We have normal flora not just on our skin, but in our mouths and in our guts too. For instance, another serious MDRO is vancomycin resistant enterococcus, VRE, which is for the most part harmless in our bowels, but when it gets everywhere, can cause very serious illnesses. When we stop taking antibiotics early or don't take them at the frequency they are prescribed, that can also cause resistance. The worst thing about MDROs is they are very few new antibiotics being discovered, so we have to be very careful with the ones we do have so we can stay ahead of bacterial infections and keep the miracles that antibiotics are happening. Please, when you are sick, don't insist that your provider give you an antibiotic prescription. Ask them why they aren't. If it's because you have a virus, an antibiotic is not going to help you anyway. If you are prescribed antibiotics, take them exactly as they are prescribed and until they are gone. But never take antibiotics prescribed to someone else or that you have saved. By taking these precautions, we can all make a big difference and keep receiving miracles that antibiotics give us every single day. DV Aviation announces merger with Deerhorn Aviation to expand charter services. DV Aviation, a leader in private aircraft management and aviation services, is pleased to announce its strategic merger with Deerhorn Aviation, a renowned charter plane company in the Permian Basin. This union marks a significant milestone for both companies and is set to enhance and expand DV Aviation's service offerings. Effective today, this merger combines the strengths and expertise of DV Aviation and Deerhorn Aviation, offering clients an unmatched suite of aviation services, including expanded private charter capabilities, tailored to meet the distinct needs of high net worth individuals and corporate travelers, a news release said. A new era of charter services. The merger will integrate Deerhorn Aviation's charter expertise with DV Aviation's established operations, resulting in a seamless and comprehensive aviation experience for clients. Our combined resources and extensive knowledge will provide unparalleled benefits, including expanded fleet. Clients can expect access to a wider array of modern, well-maintained aircraft catering to diverse travel needs and preferences. Enhanced scheduling flexibility. The integrated team will deliver improved scheduling flexibility and simplified travel logistics to ensure passengers fly when and where they wish. Unrivaled customer experience. High-touch, tailored services with an emphasis on safety, luxury, and convenience, securing DB Aviation's reputation as a white-glove aviation service provider. Commitment to excellence. This merger represents a significant step forward for DB Aviation and Deerhorn Aviation. Russell Maxey, co-owner of DB Aviation, said in a news release, "We are thrilled to combine our strengths to offer unparalleled service and expanded capabilities to our clients. Our shared values and dedication to excellence make this partnership a natural fit." Jake Griffith, co-owner of DV Aviation, added, "Deerhorn Aviation's established charter services perfectly complement our offerings, aligning with our mission to provide efficient, safe, and luxurious aviation solutions. We look forward to delivering even greater value to our clients through this merger." Integration details. The integration process will be seamless for current clients of both DV Aviation and Deerhorn Aviation. Customers can rest assured that their point of contact will remain consistent, ensuring continuity of service throughout the transition. Established in 2015, DB Aviation has built a reputation for delivering comprehensive and personalized aircraft management services with a focus on customer satisfaction and high safety standards. Based in Midland, DB Aviation serves high net worth clients with dedication and expertise. Deerhorn Aviation is a well-respected charter plane company known for its flexible and luxurious private charter services, with a focus on client experience and operational excellence. Deerhorn Aviation has been a preferred choice for discerning travelers. For more information about the merger and expanded services, please contact us at flights@dvaviation.com or call at 432-250-0500. Landgraf offers legislative update to retired teachers. Members of the Odessa Retired Teachers and School Personnel Association were urged to contact Senators Ted Cruz and John Cornyn to help get a Senate bill passed that would make their financial lives easier during a meeting Monday at Highland United Methodist Church. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, was the guest speaker. House Bill 82 recently passed the U.S. House of Representatives. The vote removes the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset. The two provisions have reduced and some cases fully canceled out Social Security benefits for civil service retirement system annuitants, including text retirement system annuitants and their spouses, widows and widowers, according to information from the meeting. In 2023, 21 million retirees in the U.S. were affected in 26 states. Texas had 215,773 retirees impacted by the policies. After passage in the House, the bill became Senate Bill 597 in the Senate. Landgraf said passage would have tremendous positive consequences if that gets pushed through the Senate. He said he couldn't imagine that the repeal would be vetoed. "That would be a hell of a way for the president to go out of office, right? Have a bunch of angry retired teachers chasing him out. But obviously, you can't take anything for granted, So time is of the essence on this, as they are up against the end of the term for Congress, Landgraf said. Not only is there a change in presidents, but a change in Congress. Once that session ends, it's over, Landgraf said. If something they wanted to pass didn't pass, you've got to start step races all over again in January. There's no continuation for the new year as the new year begins. So my advice would be to contact Senator Cruz, contact Senator Cornyn, let them know how important this is to you. They've got to get that vote done here in the next month and a half if it's going to have any chance. But if we are this close, we need to get across the finish line, he added. Cruz's email is west_texas@cruz.senate.gov. And Cornyn's contact information can be found at www.cornyn.senate.gov/contact-john-cornyn. On a similar subject, Landgraf asked attendees if the cost of living increase passed by voters last year has worked out the way it was designed. The cost of living adjustment was done in conjunction with a lump sum payment. We're a year into it. Thankfully, inflation has slowed down a little bit in the last 24 months or so, but that cost of living increase is losing value every day, Landgraf said. By show of hands, he determined that even with the cost of living adjustment, retired educators are not seeing a change in their quality of life. Pension payments have gone up, but so has the cost of everything else, Landgraf said. One reason the legislature was able to pass the cost of living adjustment 2 years ago was the state of Texas had a $33 billion budget surplus, which allowed lawmakers to tuck a portion of that away to make the pension fund stronger. Based on the comptroller's estimates, the state will have another surplus, but it will be about $18 billion or so. But it's still a fairly robust budget surplus. I do think that in order to keep the momentum going on what we've done through SB 10, which later became Proposition 9, I do think that we need to look at making another payment into the fund to help offset some of the inflation that y'all are seeing. We don't want to go to all this trouble and then you really don't feel it, right? Landgraf said. Texas made a promise to teachers decades ago to entice teachers into the classroom to help educate future generations of Texans. You weren't lured by paychecks to work in the classroom, but one thing that you were offered in addition to a modest salary was that we are a state, as a state, are going to take care of you with a nice pension upon retirement and health care insurance, and we've struggled to fulfill those promises on both fronts, Landgraf said. And again, these were promises made a long time ago, but those of you who were at the Region 18 conference a couple of months ago, heard me say this. We've got to do it because it's the right thing to do. We've got to keep the promise that was made to our teachers, no matter how long ago it was. The second thing is this, that we still have a growing population of students here in Texas who need qualified and talented teachers. If we are not going to keep our promise to the retired teachers, how can we recruit new teachers if they see that we, as a state, don't keep our promises, he added. On a separate item, Landgraf said he had lunch with Ector County ISD Interim Superintendent Keely Boyer last week to talk about the upcoming legislative session. Just before that, Landgraf had filed his first round of bills. The state funds public education based on per-pupil funding and average daily attendance at each campus. He suggests basing funding on enrollment rather than average daily attendance. Landgraf said paying teachers, cafeteria workers, office and custodial staff still costs the same whether a student shows up to school or not. That way you're not punishing for illness, he said. Landgraf said Boyer told him that if enrollment was used, it could have meant $20 million more for ECISD last year. Landgraf also has a bill to repeal the STAR exam and replace it with a norm-referenced test. During the last legislative session, a bill to enact education savings accounts was proposed during the regular session and several special sessions that followed. It was called House Bill 100, and it was an omnibus public education bill. It had $6.2 billion for public education to increase the basic allotment, which is supposed to translate into teacher pay raises. It also had some STAR test reforms. There was an education savings account provision, which is a fancy way of saying vouchers. It was limited to $500 million that was specifically for special education students, as a second priority would be for low-income students in chronically failing school districts, Landgraf said. He added that it probably wouldn't have impacted public schools in West Texas. The bill was designed to have the broadest appeal possible so that members of the House would vote for it. The $500 million education savings account wasn't something he had ever voted for before, but as part of this larger package, I voted for it because I thought we needed to get that out. There weren't enough votes to pass everything as it was, and so that whole thing died, Landgraf said. That's why we still have a $6.2 billion that's supposed to be for our teachers that's sitting in an account right now in the comptroller's office. That's something that we're going to need to do as soon as possible when the legislature convenes, get that money out the door, because it's not doing anything for anybody right now, he added. Landgraf said there is a movement in the state to have more school choice. Now the reality is we already have school choice in Texas. We choose to send our daughter to public school, and we're proud of that, he added. Landgraf said he expected to have a vote on another voucher bill, but he and his wife entrust their daughter to public schools every day. We want public schools to succeed, not just for our daughter's sake, but for all school children in Texas. I do think that when we have the budget surplus that we're talking about, I think that we can do both without hurting public schools. I don't take this as you're either for vouchers or for public schools. I don't think that's true. I think there's some truth in the middle. But I do fully expect it to be another issue. I do expect that we will have some sort of what the governor calls an education savings account bill that does pass, Landgraf said. If the state is using taxpayer money for private schools, he added that he would like to see the same accountability for private schools as public schools.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.